listening to LA Miracle Cure, and I'm your host, Barbara. With us today, we have someone who I'm very excited to bring to you as our special spotlight guest, and his name is Morgan Fox. Welcome, Morgan.
Thanks for having me.
So, Morgan, my question is, do you do? And I know that you are with the National Cannabis Industry Association, but there's so much that goes with that.
Well, NCIA is the nation's really only national trade organization for cannabis businesses, promoting the industry nationally and fighting for fair treatment for the industry in Congress. And my job is basically to try to bring attention to all the positive benefits that the cannabis industry has had in states where it's legal for medical or adult use purposes, and to bring more attention to the issues in general that affect the industry, specifically federal marijuana prohibition and issues like 280E tax reform and banking reform to allow cannabis businesses to be able to do business with banks more easily. There are a whole host of other smaller issues, but you know, primarily we just look out for ways in which that we can change federal law in order to help the legal industry grow.
Wow. Well, Morgan, you jumped right in the pool. I mean, a deep water side, and just brought the cat right out of the bag, because we know that this is still a Schedule I drug. We also know that it's illegal federally, and we also know that more than half the states, I think 38 states right now, have some legal form of cannabis use. California just went into legal for medicinal and adult use or recreational use. They don't like you to say that, but that is in a nutshell what it is. So now my question for you is, okay, where am I going to put my money? I'm in business. I'm making money. I'm legal. I've got a temporary license. What do I do with my money?
Well, unfortunately, there is still the threat of prosecution against banks that decide to offer financial services to anybody in the cannabis industry. And while some banks are still willing to do so, the vast majority of them are not. And so that basically creates a problem where you have to operate on a cash-only basis in most cases, and hire security in order to transport large amounts of cash away from your point of sale to any sort of a storage facility or to the bank. If you want to pay your taxes, you have to do that all in cash. Not only does that create great expense to people who are in the industry, but it also creates potential security issues for the people that are working at these facilities. And you know, right now, unfortunately, there is no federal remedy for that. But NCIA is working very hard. We actually just had our eighth annual lobby days, where we brought more than 200 of our members into Washington, D.C., and scheduled meetings with them with over 200 congressional offices to try to promote legislation that would create a safe harbor for banks that actually want to do business with the cannabis industry.
Ah, so if I'm hearing you right, there is a requirement of lobbying. So you're saying that you have been at this for a number of years. Somewhere I feel like you've been working at this for like 10 years, but you sound like you're a real young person. So how long have you been working at getting regulation or legislation to favor the cannabis industry?
Well, me personally, I spent the last 10 years working at the Marijuana Policy Project, working in the communications department, trying to end prohibition and stop people from getting arrested for cannabis nationwide. And I very recently moved over into NCIA. So I've really only been working on this particular aspect for a couple of months, but I've been in the cannabis sphere for a very long time. And I have to say, it's pretty amazing at the progress that we've made so far. And that progress has only happened because of pressure that people have been able to put on lawmakers at the state and federal level through organizations like NCIA.
So basically what you're saying is if you want to change policy, and this doesn't necessarily have to just mean with cannabis, but if there's something that is impeding you from doing good business or being part of the citizenry or being positive, then you start at the local level, then the state level, then you move into the national level, and that's how you really affect change. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't think you necessarily have to do it in that order. It really just depends on what your priorities are and what you are specifically working on. You know, obviously, some of the organizations that focus on federal work don't have the bandwidth to be able to work on every single local issue. Similarly, people that are very concerned with local issues don't necessarily have the bandwidth or ability to be, you know, pounding on doors in Congress and trying to set up meetings with lawmakers. So I think it really depends on what the specific focus is. But no change happens without all of those things being in place. You know, these laws don't change themselves, and lawmakers don't educate themselves. So it's important for everybody at any level of policy change to really get involved and to reach out to the people that are actually in charge of making those laws.
So let me ask you this, because it's the million-dollar question we all want to know. With Los Angeles, we are at the epicenter. We like to think of it as ground zero, because we all know that Hollywood, Los Angeles is the place everybody wants to be. California is driving, is really going to drive this whole industry and how things are done. Let me just tell you a couple of the problems, because I know that we spoke before and you were telling me that, you know, you're not that familiar with a lot of things that are affecting business here in California. We know banking is one of them, but I'll tell you another one. Like, let's say for cultivators, because it is a plant and it does start with growing. So if you use certain pesticides or certain chemicals to help with the growth and the success of your farm, if that touches the water stream or the watershed, and when there is a opportunity for this watershed to be tested, that is a felony. So it's not a felony to grow or cultivate, but it is a felony in California if the water becomes contaminated. What do you think about that?
Well, I can't really speak to that issue in particular, but I think that if you kind of look at these sort of issues in a general sense, you know, this is a fledgling industry that has a lot of stigma attached to it, and there are a lot of concerns that people didn't necessarily have to worry about when it was illegal. You know, their primary concern was not getting arrested simply for cultivation. Now, I think that it is going to be the responsibility of the industry to work with local government to really find a common ground and, a reasonable agreement when it comes to a lot of these regulations, including the one that you're speaking about. You know, and I think that perhaps a felony is a little bit extreme for something like that, but not knowing all of the facts involved in it, I can't really make that decision or statement. But that being said, like, all of these problems can really be improved by people who are in the industry actively working with city and state government in order to find some sort of a compromise.
Right. And, you know, that is the most difficult part of this. I just personally came back from Michigan. And it was very interesting to be out of state, out of Los Angeles, and talking to people about cannabis. Because even though there is still a need for compassionate care, medicinal use in Michigan, I mean, people are all the same and people are suffering with such things as PTSD. They're suffering with, particularly for our veterans, they're suffering with cancer, they're suffering with AIDS, they're suffering with fibromyalgia and lupus, all these degenerative diseases, and of course, chronic pain. And so you go into a state like, let's say, Michigan, and people are afraid to talk about it. You know, you call the phone number to see if you can have safe access, and no one answers. So what do you say to those who are still in the shadows? How do they come back and make their voices heard and known, their needs and their concerns without being legally targeted?
Well, I haven't really heard of any cases of people actually being legally targeted for their advocacy work in Michigan or really anywhere else in the recent past. And if you're looking specifically at Michigan, I think that there's, a little bit of understandable confusion because the state refused to properly regulate its medical marijuana program for years and finally just started getting around to it now that there's an adult use initiative on the ballot. So, what it really comes down to it, though, is that people should not be afraid. This is a very popular issue now. If we look at national polling, And legalization for adult use is polling at between 60 and 64%, depending on the poll. Support for medical use nationwide is at like 93%, if not higher. And I can't think of a single issue that has that much support. So people really shouldn't be afraid to stand up and make their voices heard when it comes to this issue, because it is now a mainstream issue.
So tell me, when you are lobbying in Washington, D.C., what are the congressmen, what are their main concerns when it comes to cannabis and access?
Well, I don't directly lobby the actual members of Congress. The rest of the team in our D.C. office handles most of that. But primarily what I've heard is that I think that people that aren't on board with legalization are kind of stuck in the past, and they think that marijuana is a gateway drug, which has been proven it is not. They think that teen use is going to skyrocket, which we've seen has not been the case in legal states. They think that drug driving fatalities are going to skyrocket, and we have not seen that that's the case either. But it's really hard to unlearn a lot of that stuff, which is why we have to constantly try to educate them about the actual facts of what has been happening in states that have changed their marijuana laws and moved away from prohibition.
Well, you know, Morgan, it's very difficult to move forward if you have a federal Food and Drug Administration who, number one, does the classifications and the certifications and helps fund the drug industry. So if there are no human trials or clinical trials, or if we don't have any information that can be peer reviewed, then therefore you can't use what people are using right now to say that it's not a gateway drug. So where do you use, where do you get your information from when you talk about some of these polls and some of these ways of saying that cannabis is not harmful? Where do you get this information from?
Well, first of all, I don't want to say that cannabis isn't harmful completely. Cannabis does have a very small addiction ratio, much smaller than a lot of commonly available pharmaceutical and recreational drugs, particularly much, much smaller than alcohol or tobacco. But it is does have a very small percentage of addiction rate. And it's also not completely harmless. However, when you compare it with a lot of other drugs, and despite FDA and Department of Justice interference in research, there has actually been quite a bit of research done on this that has been able to prove that the harms associated with cannabis are very, very small compared to most other drugs, as well as compared to the harms caused by prohibition.
Now, that's very interesting. And last week, everybody listening, you're listening to LA Miracle Cure. And last week, we had Tommy Rosen, who is a guru and an addiction therapist, that talked a little bit about not just cannabis, but he was much more widespread with how we are a society of addiction. It's not necessarily one thing that addicts us. We operate in a climate of addiction. So it could be from a video game to a pill to alcohol to a bad relationship. So some of us are prone to addiction. We know that. We know that it's genetic. And then some of us are empty inside and looking for hobbies and things that can take up our time. And cannabis certainly has always been a social aspect. I think it's always been a community and underground. So when we come back, everybody, we're talking with Morgan Fox, and he is with the National Cannabis Industry Association out of Washington, D.C. And when we come back, we're going to talk to him a little bit about what's happening without the social implications that cannabis has been known for.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
And we're back. I'm Barbara, and this is LA Miracle Cure. And we have with us Morgan Fox, who's gracious enough to come to us from Washington, D.C. And I'd like to ask you, because we're, you know, I know that you work with the National Cannabis Industry Association. How many states have a local organization where people can contact and belong?
That's correct. And we're really not a chapter-based organization like, say, normal. But we do have some affiliate organizations, and we're updating our affiliate program right now. So that's going to be changing shortly. But we'll definitely be sure to let the people in the industry know that any sort of changes that happens there. But we also work with a lot of other groups like California Cannabis Industry Association and things like that.
And so how I came about knowing about your organization was through events. It seems that you guys put together one of the most informative business events that I've had a chance to be a part of. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how that outreach works? And I know you have something coming up in San Jose. Will you be joining the team in San Jose?
I will. And this will be my first National Cannabis Industry Association business summit. So I'm really excited about that.
And so what is a business summit? What does that look like for cannabis? I mean, is it, we just talk here, so you can tell, is it a smoke out? I mean, what's really going on?
No, not even close. It's a conference featuring members of the industry, as well as some of the top legal, scientific, technological, and policy minds in the field to be able to share information and learn from each other, in order to help bolster this industry and help end cannabis prohibition.
Wow. Well, what I noticed that I thought was very interesting lately, this new wave. So this is our second season here at LA Miracle Cure. And you could take this time to go to our website, LAMiracleCure.com, or you could go to America Out Loud and hear all of our season one shows. And season one just kind of defined what cannabis was. It kind of talked a little bit about who were the players, and we met the king of LA. We got a chance to meet people that were on the ground changing the laws, making it possible for people to make money. Now we're talking in season two to people who are not really touching the plant. So Morgan, you would be one of those. So you are a person who has 10 years experience, but don't you see this new wave of people that have never interfaced with cannabis before being employed and making decisions about cannabis?
Well, I think that that's one of the difficult things to deal with. As the industry becomes more mature, a lot of people who, and actually more protected under the law, you're going to see a lot of people who are just looking at it as a business. And, you know, while I think that, some of the culture might get lost there a little bit, it still legitimizes the industry and allows it to grow at a much greater pace. However, I don't see any sort of like a takeover happening, which I think a lot of people were very afraid of, because most of the laws that are going into effect now are allowing for a multitude and in some cases an unlimited number of micro business and small business licenses, which are going to allow mom and pops to be able to continue functioning in this market.
Absolutely, because whether you're for or against cannabis, what we don't want to see is it be given over to big pharma or big tobacco.
I mean, just as an observer of the industry, I mean, I don't think that it's going to be possible to avoid having those players get involved in some fashion. However, you know, it really all comes down to demand. Cannabis consumers, by and large, don't want those products. They want products grown by people that they know or that are grown a little bit more locally, and where they can actually trace the production line. That's what cannabis consumers are generally about. Of course, some bigger businesses might find a chunk of the market that they can hold on to. But I honestly think that it'll look a whole lot like the sort of the craft beer industry, where you have some big producers and then a plethora of smaller producers that have a huge market portion.
You know what? I agree with you. And that brings us to social consumption. So in Los Angeles, people have gotten their city license, their county license. You did hear me, the city license, the county license, the state license. Mm-hmm. Some of these licenses, mind you, were temporary. And they were issued for 120 days. So now they have to reapply for the permanent license. So that was several licenses that I already mentioned. Do you think that eventually, let's say 5 years down the road, do you think those licenses will be sort of like something like when you want to buy a liquor license? Like I would just give you $500,000 and just take over your liquor license. Do you think it would be that way? Or do you think every individual and every company will have to be vetted like this first round of business owners?
Well, I think that's tough to say, but it really depends on what state you're in. That is all going to be up to how state law goes. You know, I'm sure that in some cases, the licensing will continue to have the same sort of strict regulatory process that it has now. In some states, it may relax so that the licenses are actually easily transferable. I think it really is just going to be a waiting game to see how that shakes out. I tend to think that because cannabis has been so heavily regulated, that it will lean more towards the side of licenses not necessarily being transferable, and anybody wanting to get a license will have to go through the same process that people are doing now. But I could be wrong. Yeah, and I think it's really going to depend on the state.
Right. Well, I do know that, as you said before, that people, I mean, it's just kind of like wineries and vineyards, you know, being from Northern California, you know, the Napa Valley, if you will, or, you know, Sonoma County, that the whole genre of going to a winery and tasting the fruits that the winery has, the hearing the story, knowing the background, being a part of that culture is really what cannabis is about. I think also, even in compassionate care, when we look at people like, you know, Weed for Warriors, or when we look at to people who are providing cannabis without a price, I mean, they're just giving it free, taking a penitentiary chance to make sure that people have access that are in pain, that are, you know, suffering from AIDS or have real problems with their health. The interesting thing is it's all based off of community, like you said. So if there's no places where you can go and enjoy this, such as social consumption, I mean, doesn't that take away some of the healing process and some of the benefits?
Absolutely. I mean, the goal from the very beginning was to have cannabis to be legal and regulated similarly to alcohol. And in order to do that, you have to include social consumption. Not to mention the fact that since public consumption is still illegal in pretty much everywhere, despite the fact that cannabis being legal now has resulted in a lot fewer arrests, you still get arrests for public consumption. And unfortunately, the racial disparities that existed with possession arrests are also existing for public consumption arrests because of you know, various problems with police culture and with over-policing of certain communities. So until we provide people with a place to be able to legally consume cannabis, we're still going to see those same numbers. And that's not even to mention the public housing issue where you can be evicted even if you're a patient for using cannabis on their premises simply because they have federal funding and they need to be able to keep up that that funding flow. And so if you live in public housing, you really have no place other than another private residence of somebody that you know who doesn't live in public housing to be able to legally consume cannabis. And that's not right, that people can't take advantage of the laws as they are simply because of their living situation.
Wow. That's very interesting. Well, you know, we find that, you know, like we say, the local jurisdiction really kind of runs the policy. And a lot of time, you know, we hear the words that we want to hear, such as we hear legal, but we don't ever hear the bylaws. And there is no footprint, or you're not going to get a phone book that's going to come to your house. It's going to have all the rules in there. So, you know, if you're not engaging in an organization like the National Cannabis Industry Association and you're in business, then you don't know what to expect, what to anticipate, and your concerns are going to fall on deaf ears and you're going to be at risk. So let me ask you this question. So what happens when a person goes from one medical state to another medical state? Is there some kind of agreement that we don't know of federally that would allow a sick person to go, let's say, from legal Nevada with their medicinal carry-on or whatever to legal California with the right paperwork? How does that work?
Well, under federal law, that doesn't work at all and is considered interstate drug trafficking. But some states have decided to allow reciprocity programs or are willing to accept medical cards from other states. I think Nevada is a good example of one. They've been accepting California cards for years now. Washington, D.C. now accepts medical cards from any medical state on the Eastern Seaboard, as well as, I believe, possibly California as well. But these are really just state laws. So it really, if you're going to be traveling across state lines anywhere with medicine, you absolutely have to make sure that you've looked into the laws. And also, if you're just planning to travel somewhere that is a medical marijuana state and you're not even carrying anything with you, you have to think about what your access is going to look like. So it makes sense to look at the laws of your destination in order to figure out if you're going to be able to go to the dispensaries there.
Right. So perhaps we're still doing the staycation instead of the vacation. Right. Because, you know, like you said, I mean, you can't make it much more plainer than that. Yes, it's legal, but no, it is a federal drug say it again for us so we know really what we're doing when we cross a state line with cannabis in our pockets.
Well, I mean, it's considered interstate drug trafficking. However, most of the time you're not going to encounter federal law enforcement. You'll be encountering state law enforcement. But if the laws in the state that you're passing through happen to be very harsh, you know, like, for example, like Idaho, if you're going from Washington, where it's legal, Oregon, where it's legal, through Idaho to get to Montana, where it's legal for medical purposes, if you happen to get picked up by local police in Idaho, you're looking at jail time.
Mm-hmm. I see. And your card and your temporary license.
None of it will matter there.
None of that will matter. Now, you know, now that we have you talking this, we've got about 2 minutes before we go to break. Can you give us a little information about what was the drama going on over in Ohio? Because we had heard that Ohio was really being resistant and not going forward with some of the laws like other states.
Well, Ohio actually had a ballot initiative that was working towards getting on the ballot in 2016. And unfortunately, well, I guess fortunately and unfortunately, the legislature decided to beat the campaign to the punch. And this was run by MPP and a number of other organizations. But when the legislature passed a medical marijuana law that was much more restrictive than the one that was in the campaign, it took a lot of the steam out of the campaign, both in terms of funding, but also just in terms of being able to promote a more expansive law after one had already been passed by the legislature. And in typical legislative fashion, they've been very slow to implement it. But it looks as if now, at least in the next month or so, there's going to be finally legal access in Ohio for patients.
Wow. Well, you know what? It takes work. It takes more than just a village. It takes people with the know-how and just being able to recraft. I really have to compliment, you know, people like yourself, Morgan, who have been able to reframe cannabis and remarket it to the public, you know, with a different name, no longer marijuana, you know, it's now cannabis. And I mean, it's just, I mean, I never thought I would see this in my lifetime. I'll tell you that. Now, listen, when we
it's a big change from last year, or from the last 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a big change. And, you know, when we come back, we're going to go to break now. We're here with Morgan Fox. He's giving us a national perspective, and I thought it was about time we know what's really going down in the town where you are. All right. So you're listening to LA Miracle Cure, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
You're listening to LA Miracle Cure, and I have Morgan Fox here with me. Morgan, I'd like to talk about advertising, because how are you going to make money if you're not advertising? And, you know, we've always advertised, either online, Facebook. A lot of people use Instagram. You know, it's IG lifestyle, and television, billboards, magazines. Tell me, what is the federal overview of advertising?
Well, advertising has been entirely a state issue up until this point, but I know that a lot of federal lawmakers are very concerned about advertising, just as they were for alcohol and cigarettes. And I think that we can expect to see pretty heavy federal restrictions on advertising once marijuana becomes legal nationally, or at least legal at the federal level where states can determine their own policies. That being said, I think that the majority of the cannabis industry is very, very interested in being good actors and making sure that they're following the rules and learning from the mistakes of those other industries, and particularly want to create a good impression both of the industry as a whole, but of their own individual businesses in the community. So they have an incentive and an innate desire not to, like, advertise to kids, try to make their advertising appeal much more to adults and to much wider demographic of consumers than it would have in the past. And, so I think that that combined with the state regulations of advertising are going to be very effective at dispelling those fears federally and helping us move policy along in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. So back to health-related claims. What do you think about that? Do you think that it's okay, or do you think that all cannabis should have some form of a disclaimer?
Well, I think that like any other product that causes impairment, there are going to be regulations regarding, relative safety. And there's obviously going to have to be labeling involved to show that it has been quality control tested. In terms of disclaimers, I obviously don't think that there's going to be something as bad as what the disclaimers are required for, like, tobacco use, but that's because cannabis is considerably safer than tobacco.
And the delivery system.
As long as people are being honest about the fact that, you know, cannabis isn't harmless, but it is much, much, much safer than a lot of other substances, and it also has a lot of medical benefits. You know, as long as we're just honest about that, then we'll be able to come to a place where we have the appropriate level of disclaimers.
Right. I want to ask you another question because you have so much information. I'm just dying to know. Okay, so what about the CBD business and hemp? I mean, when we have the cannabis conversation with Congress, do you mention CBD and hemp? Is that also a part of the conversation?
Well, NCI doesn't get involved in hemp production at all, and CBD is kind of a complicated issue because despite the fact that many people think that it's legal federally, it actually is not. And I think CBD laws exist in some form in 46 states, but that doesn't mean that there's any in-state production allowed. And really, the only products that are legal, and like any CBD products, have to either be made under a medical or an adult use program within a state, or actually under its hemp production as well, in the few states that actually have that. Or it has to be made from only the seeds and stems of imported hemp plants. So I think a large number of the products that are out there that you know claim to be a CBD product are either not technically legal or are in essence snake oil and don't really have a decent amount of CBD because they're made from inferior products as opposed to you know, high quality medical grade heavy CBD plants.
Oh, wow. I love how you said snake oil. That was a good one. All right. And lastly, I'd like to know, okay, so now that we've got the cat just straight out of the bag, I'd like to know, what do you see for the future of cannabis? How do you see this? I mean, is it true that LA is going to make $15 billion? And if so, if there's no banking laws rebooted, then the money's going to be under everybody's pillow? I mean, tell me, what do you really see happening? And will this enrich our community?
Well, I mean, the fact that you have a legal industry that's creating jobs and generating a lot of entrepreneurship and innovation is absolutely going to help these communities or any community where these businesses are operating. And I think that, you know, we're not going to see things like people hoarding money under their pillows. What we'll see is the exponential growth of cash transport services and security vehicles and armored cars in order to move this money around. And the city is going to benefit from it because of all that extra tax revenue. You know, it might not solve all the problems of the city, but it will you know, take some of the pressure off of city and state budget.
Wow.
And hopefully, within the very near future, you know, maybe as early as this year, but much more likely next year, we'll see real comprehensive cannabis policy reform at the federal level that allows states to make their own decisions about this, so there will be less threat of federal interference, but that also allows banks to have a safe harbor in order to do business with the cannabis industry if they want to. And, you know, I think that that's coming very, very soon.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, all right. So now I understand that the National Cannabis Industry Association has something coming up in San Jose. What are the dates for that?
That is going to be in the last week of July.
Mm-hmm.
So I forget the exact dates, unfortunately.
Well, that's
I don't
okay.
have it right in front of me, but it's going to be in the last week of July. But if you go to thecannabisindustry.org, you'll be able to find out all the information you need about those events, as well as becoming a member of the organization and helping support our work in Congress.
Right. And also there'll be a meeting, or rather a business expo, happening sometime in October in Anaheim. And then I think you'll have another big one in 2019. So look for those events. I want to thank you very much, Morgan, for being with us and giving us this interesting overview from Washington, D.C. as to what it looks like for cannabis in the future. And, you know, thank you again. And for everybody listening, this is LA Miracle Cure, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
I'd like you to meet Dr. Bev, psychotherapist, grandmother, podcast and talk radio host of Emotions Are Us on America Out Loud. You've seen a lot in your years in private practice. What is the one obstacle that people fear the most?
Asking for help in the midst of a crisis. Having the courage to call a professional when they don't know what to do, how to do.
Dr. Bev, we've seen a rise in street violence in cities everywhere around the world. What can we do to change this trajectory to keep our family and loved ones safe?
Make time to talk. Make time to encourage each other and listen. Listen. Don't judge. Listen.
Yeah, well said. Sometimes we don't do enough listening. Speaking of which, when we say on America Out Loud, let the silent voices be heard, how can we turn the tide of ignorance in the world today?
Stop listening to the fake news. Think for yourself. Actions. Actions speak louder than words. Follow the connected dots. If it acts like a duck, walk like a duck, it is a duck.
Well, with all the fake news and bad information out there, we call ourselves the alternative news choice. America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications.
And you know what? That was a very riveting conversation that we had with Morgan Fox. I mean, we could tell, number one, that he was young, but he was empowered with so much information about this thing called cannabis. We also were really given a greater sense of the power behind cannabis. I think that is the most important takeaway from this, the level of organization for cannabis and the level of people that are behind this new frontier. And we know when it comes down to having an opportunity to be on the ground floor of any business, of any new idea, it's really exciting, riveting, and particularly when you got a chance to make a lot of money. And I think what we're missing here is how much infrastructure is going on in behind the scenes in terms of the type of employment opportunities that cannabis is going to present, from whether it be in cultivation, where right now we see a lot of the farms, you know, they are up in the woods. They're up in Mendocino County. They're far, far, far away in Northern California, particularly here in California. And you couldn't find a farm if you tried, not unless you were personally invited. But now it's coming to where there are going to be courses and agricultural classes, and people are going to be hired, and it's going to be a job to manage these farms. I just heard a couple of days ago that the heavyweight champion, Mike Tyson, has opened his farm in the Mojave Desert. He has 40 acres out there, and he's throwing his hat in the ring. We know that Snoop Dogg has his hat in the ring, and we know that Whoopi Goldberg from The View, and of course, you know, from the entertainment world, we love Whoopi, they all have their hats in the ring, meaning that they are in big business and in position to hire many, many, many people. And I'm not just talking about bud tenders, which is probably the first line of defense if you go in a dispensary and you have an ailment and you're not quite sure of, oh my goodness, what should I do? Should I go with an edible? Should I go with flower? Should I go with, you don't know really what is going to be the best delivery system for yourself. So bud tenders are the people who work behind the counter. But there's management positions. There are people that are in advertising. There are people that are writing copy. There are people that are writing magazines. Soon, I have this podcast, but there'll be full-on television shows and cooking shows that are all geared to this culture that is coming like a wave, like an ocean wave, into a city near you. We are at an impasse now with cannabis to where many licenses have been given, and many licenses, people, there are people out there within the sound of my voice who just don't feel that they want to divulge what they're doing. And so is it fair for people now to be licensed and people who are unlicensed when it's legal to be held in jail? Is that really fair? I mean, when we come to the fact that prohibition for cannabis is over and it's legal, then we should also be seeing people released from jail. We should be seeing people that were involved in cannabis beforehand. We should see perhaps that their records of felonies should possibly even be expunged. Because moving forward, as we heard from our guest in this week's Spotlight, Mr. Morgan Fox, what we heard was, is that there's going to be federal regulation that's going to allow banks to accept this money. Right now, there are banks that are doing business, but trust me, in Los Angeles, there are some people that pay $8,000 to $10,000 per deposit. Because what happens is when you're banking, you have to create employers, or you have to employ a separate cell group that actually goes in, counts your money, and vets your money, and makes sure that you're not part of some major organization, or that you're not laundering funds. And so that's what they pay for these cash deposits. And I found that to be so unfair, but that is the what is used as the going rate right now for a bank deposit in Los Angeles. It also kind of makes me think, when I think about, you know, DUIs and coming in contact with someone who is not under the protection of social consumption, meaning when I would think that you're consuming, you would be either in your home or you would be in a place like a bar, you know, or a coffee shop where everything is contained and you're there during the duration of your experience. But we don't have that yet. So people within the sound of my voice, I'm hoping, are not using and then driving, because, you know, there is, you know, officers out there that are now being trained to recognize those people who are under the influence of cannabis. But the interesting thing is that there is no detectability for how much THC is in your system, like it is with the blood alcohol quantification. So when you have a blood alcohol of 0.1, 0.1, you know, they can say whether that's a man or a woman, whether she's 250 pounds or if she's, you know, 95 pounds, you know, that you are no longer capable of driving a vehicle. We also know that people like Tiger Woods, you know, had an incident where he was using a prescribed drug and was incapable of operating a vehicle. Well, you know, I think that we are going to have to demand our states to come up with a on-the-spot test. And it can't just be because you smell it, officer. It can't just be because I'm driving slower. You've got to be able to give me my blood alcohol or you're going to have to let me go. And I think that that's very important for people to understand going forward, you know, so that if in fact someone accuses you and you're not using, there's got to be a way that they have a test right there immediately to be able to, separate you from someone that maybe is breaking the law. I think it's also important to know that, you know, in California, there is a social equity program. And what does that mean, social equity? How does that really play into the whole overview of cannabis? Well, I remember when I voted in California for compassionate care and for access to cannabis, I remember thinking that there were so many people incarcerated that I really wanted them to be free if they were nonviolent people that have been arrested for possession or whatever. I wanted them to be free. And I don't think that's really happening. I think that's a big part of this issue that I don't see a lot of people addressing. I don't see a lot of people addressing the fact that, you know, we still have a large amount of our citizens that are incarcerated, you know, for these minor offenses. And I think it bogs down our courts. I think it confuses people when it comes to how they should vote. I think that we have seen just in this past conversation with our guest, what organization can do and how we can actually take charge of our beliefs. Now, you know, here at LA Miracle Cure, we are not for or against. We just bring you the facts. I think that it's very important for people to know the law and know what is important if you are in this business, to know exactly what's going to happen and what your chances are of staying underground when everybody's above ground. What are your chances of that? So social equity, on the other hand, I think is something that we're going to have to go a little further into. So next week, I'm hoping to be able to bring another riveting guest that will be able to give us some information that we hadn't heard before. I know that there are a lot of stores, dispensaries, and web delivery services in Los Angeles that are closing, that are being closed, that are being shut down, that are being raided. And I'm hoping to bring you a couple of stories from the consequences of operating without a license. I thought it was really interesting to hear about the CBD and the snake oil and the fact that all CBD products, can you believe it, have to be imported from another country. There is no CBD that is grown in the United States legally. That was really a statement right there. Well, everybody, I want you to know that you can always go and hear to season one, which is on America Out Loud, of course, under LA Miracle Cure. You can go there and listen to several different people that were kind enough to be our guests and bring us the real deal from their experiences. We're in season two now, and season two is dedicated to the people who don't touch the plant, to the people who are involved with cannabis from a distance. And believe you me, that group of people is growing. And as we heard Morgan talk about with the National Cannabis Industry Association, we heard him speak very candidly about how can someone be involved if they have no experience or if they have no understanding of cannabis and what cannabis has went through. And are they just going to bring big business? Are they going to make the business models, you know, so big that they're so profitable, you know, that the mom and pop businesses and compassionate care kind of fall to the wayside? I think it's important to stay on top of this because it's changing our culture, our atmosphere, and it's going to change our country. Everybody, you've been listening to LA Miracle Cure. I'm your host, Barbara, and we are on America Out Loud.